Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, everyone in the franchise world. My name is Paul Segretto, and this is Franchise Today. I'm reporting from beautiful, sunny San Antonio, Texas, and my co-host, Stan Friedman, will unfortunately not be with us today. He's traveling back from the International Franchise Association board meetings in Santa Barbara, California. You got to enjoy some of the beautiful California weather and, of course, great company with the IFA board. We look forward to getting some feedback on that trip. We also want to thank Tony Lamb, the CEO and founder from Kona Ice, who was our guest last week on Franchise Today. Really a very, very enlightening person, a great story. I highly recommend that you listen to his segment on Franchise Today if you haven't already done so. And remember, all segments of Franchise Today are available on blogtalkradio.com/Franchise Today Show or on iTunes. Just look it up on Franchise Today. A couple of things front of the house going on in franchising. One thing that's real interesting that popped up the other day on Facebook, we've been talking all along about NLRB ruling. We're talking about the increase in minimum wage and overtime rules and what have you. And the fight for $15 per hour minimum wage now is really starting to escalate with respect to unintended consequences. They're taking hold. Several industries nationwide are addressing it. One of the most public moves combating wage increases to date, Wendy's fast food chains announced plan to automize cashiers at over 6,000 facilities. So as many of us in franchising have said, this is not something that's going to increase jobs. It's actually going to hurt in the job growth, and we're already seeing some of this taking place on a pretty large scale. There's also in this week's IFA Smart Brief two interesting articles that I want to push you towards, and especially young brands and young franchisees. The first one is an article that comes out of Vancouver, Canada, about entrepreneurs Brian Scudamore and Gary Charlwood, and they talk about what to do before adding a second franchise brand to the mix. And, of course, Brian began franchising 1-800-GOT-JUNK and now oversees multiple brands, and Charlwood purchased the Canadian rights to Century 21 in the 70s, and he was a member of the IFA Hall of Fame in 2008. Great article there. Second one from Haziz Hashim, our IFA chairman, and his article is, are you ready to be a multi-unit franchisee? And before becoming multi-unit franchisees, entrepreneurs should consider their reasons for expansion and whether the timing is right. Running multiple locations requires a shift in focus and a willingness to own. He lends some great advice, and he says, the knowledge to open 80 or 90 units doesn't just drop down from heaven. You have to go out and find the people who've done it and learn from them. And this from a gentleman that has been quite successful as a multi-unit operator, so I would definitely heed his advice. And I wish way back when I was a multi-unit franchisee, I had someone like Aziz to turn to, because I, too, have succeeded tremendously as a multi-unit franchisee, but, of course, as many of you know, almost failed catastrophically because, boy, it really created some challenges that I certainly wasn't prepared for. So, you know, look at IFA Smart Briefs. Look at all the things at the IFA, the National Franchise Association. There's some good stuff that just came out, lessons from the IFA Legal Symposium. Take a look at all that. And, of course, Stan will be back next week to give us a little bit more insight into the front of the house that he normally takes care of. Before, you know, moving on with our guest today, I wanted to remind everybody out there to really do their part with the Franchise Action Network. You know, just because some rulings have come down doesn't mean they're not going to be challenged. So do all you can, and certainly plan on being at the IFA event in Washington, D.C. in September. Everybody must do their part. read a quote yesterday from today's guest that said they did everything in those years, knocking on doors to get jobs, hiring the employees to get them done, managing their schedules, dealing with customer complaints, resolving issues. It was the best hands-on learning you could get because it teaches you what the real world is about and allowed me to save enough to get my first truck, trailer, and equipment. And, of course, this from Carmelo Marsala, the founder and president of SprayNet. And Carmelo, sorry about that. Welcome to Franchise Today.
Thanks for having me, Paul.
So, you're young, you're successful, you have a great path ahead of you, but you've also burned a great path behind you in all that you've accomplished. And so before we get into, some of the accolades, and I really like to, talk about some of the experiences around them, tell us a bit about, where you started from and what led you to founding SprayNet, your current franchise company that you founded and are now trying to launch into the USA from your experience and success in Canada.
Well, actually, I kind of knew that I had to have my own business because I was never really able to keep a job. A bit too strong-willed for that. I always had my own ideas, opinions. So I decided to actually join College Pro, which is, a lot of you know, it's a student painting franchise. So I actually started as a franchisee. I think the training that I got from that was incredible. I got a lot of hands-on training, like you mentioned before. And I just liked the fact that everything was consistent. We had coaches who we can rely on, and we were able to offer something that was scalable. So from there, that's where really the idea came from. I was a franchisee. I started my own business, and then at some point I said, well, I think I'm ready to be a franchisor, and that happened in 2014.
Yeah, I love some of the work that your PR firm and others have done on your behalf in some of the articles that I've seen places. I was doing a little bit of research for the show. And one, as you said, you figured you had to do something on your own because you couldn't hold the job and you couldn't focus on it, so to speak. And one of the articles said, problem with authority fuels the founder of the house painting franchise. And of course that was written in theglobeandmail.com. I thought that was a great, great article. Because there are so many young entrepreneurs out there that, in years past might have been stuck in a job and not doing what they want to do and not being able to focus on what they want to do. And I think the way the economy has turned and everybody, having to be responsible for themselves and their own futures, we're seeing more and more entrepreneurs. And I just think, that's a great story. So tell us a little bit about what SprayNet is and what your differentiating factor is in the marketplace.
Yeah, so when I was a student painting franchisee, we were just using the conventional brush and roller method of painting houses. And that's really, really good for maintenance jobs. So wood decks, wood siding, what people regularly think of when they think of exterior painting. I happened to stumble upon a client who wanted their front door done. And this was a big house, and it was like a brand new house. And I knew what a regular paint job would do, which was good for a wood door, but this was not a wood door. This was a metal door that had some vinyl in it. So I literally spent 4 hours, found the best product I can possibly put, used flow modifiers. So flow modifiers are something that gives you a better finish when you brush on a paint. And then I stepped back from my work and I said, well, it looks good, but it doesn't look like new. So then I said, well, if they can do it like new in a factory, because, when you get a door and it's black, it's been painted, why can't we just do that on site? And that's when I started my research. So then I went to a factory, figured out how they did it. But the problem was those products are sprayed in a controlled environment. They're toxic, and they're made to dry quickly so that you can ship out your product. So I figured, well, let me just start spraying. At least that'll give me some sort of advantage where I'll have a better finish. And then as the years went on, 2 years into it, I said, well, spraying on these conventional products, yeah, the finish is better, but I'm still not getting the factory finish. And that's really when we started formulating our own product. I had the funds to meet some formulators, some chemists, and then that's where it all began. That's when we started franchising, because that's when we had something really, really completely unique.
That's really something. It seems to obviously be working. Tell us about some of your success in Canada. Where are you currently located?
Well, we started franchising in 2014. I was pretty much alone, didn't have a franchise consultant, so I wanted to start with two franchisees. They both had tremendous success. They purchased a second territory. That's when I met a franchise consultant. End of 2014, he helped me structure it, finalize my operations manual, put systems in place, distribution for our products. And then we actually moved into Ontario and the Maritimes. And then literally within that same year, we moved into every single city in Canada. So we're pretty much coast to coast, every single city in Canada. There's nowhere in Canada that we don't service right now. So within less than 2 years, we pretty much sold out Canada.
So now you have your sights on the United States, and I understand you're going to be at the upcoming International Franchise Expo, which is next Thursday, Friday, and Saturday, the 16th to the 18th at the Jacob Javits Convention Center in New York City. I look forward to meeting you in person, as well as many that are looking at that would be interested in looking at your brand. Tell us, you know, what your thoughts are entering the U.S. market and what you perceive to be some of the challenges that you might face.
Well, I'm super excited for sure for the U.S. I mean, the success and the development of our franchise in Canada has been crazy. We didn't expect to do all Canada in 2 years. The thing that what's super exciting about the U.S. is just within a two-hour plane ride of our head office in Montreal, we have more territories. We have triple the amount of territories that are in all of Canada. So for us to go to Vancouver is a lot longer and plus a different time zone than the U.S. Given just the amount of people and the reception at the IFA convention in February, I'm super, super excited. I can't wait for New York. I can't wait to see what the reception is like. I think the service makes a ton of sense in the U.S. too. I mean, we've done our market studies. We've cut our territories. Everything just seems to make more sense in the U.S. than does in Canada. So I just can't wait to get started in New York.
And where do you think some of your biggest challenges are going to be, whether it be competition, whether it be knowing the geographic markets? What do you think that might look like?
Well, I think because it's so much bigger, it's going to be scaling our staff to be able to support everybody. So in terms of distribution, cross-border distribution in Canada, obviously our product doesn't have to cross the border. So we're looking at setting up a distribution center in the U.S. We're launching corporate territories in Florida within the next 3 months. In terms of challenges, I think the challenge is going to be to have the team to be able to coordinate all that because it's going to be a lot bigger and a lot quicker than it was in Canada, and we don't want to slow down. So we're actually hiring now. Normally how it works is our consultants always end up being full-time executives. It's happened twice already. It seems to be happening a third time. So we're really scaling up. I mean, there's, of course, going to be challenges in terms of the legal and accounting legislations that are different in the U.S. We're registering in all the states. That's been a bit of a headache. But, I mean, there's challenges in everything you do. So I don't see anything stopping us. It's also because we've been talking to a lot of people in the U.S. So guys like you who know a lot about the franchise world, I met a lot of people at the IFA, got a ton of insight. So we're really using the people around us to help us, you know, kind of predict those challenges and just, you know, just make the franchise in the U.S. a reality.
Sure. Yeah, certainly the IFA and all the people at the IFA, I mean, there's some great experience and success, and it's always great how much they're willing to share that with newcomers into franchising and young entrepreneurs such as yourself. Tell us a little bit about, you know, the type of franchisees that you're looking for. What does the ideal candidate profile look like?
So that's evolved, like, quite drastically in the last 2 years. The first franchisees I thought would be owner-operators, so that's what we started with. They had good success, but then as our model grew, we started getting some executives who were interested in our model who were just tired, I guess, of their everyday 9-to-5s or whatnot and wanted to get a bit more hands-on, have the ability to lead a team. So we actually have, like, some top executives, bank VPs, executives from some of the biggest brands in North America. We've actually purchased a lot of territories in major cities in Canada. And they've purchased two territories with a first right refusal on two extra territories. So what we see in the – what we figure in the U.S. is it's going to be a bit of the same thing because the territories in Canada are a lot bigger just because the population density is not as high as in the States. So we probably figure that we're going to be selling a lot of 2-2 combos or three territories or three right of refusal territories. For us in the States, that looks like it's maybe max an hour and a half drive from one end of the territory to the other. So I think in the States, it's going to be a lot more business people who are ready to run bigger businesses, build a team and scale, have production managers, sales manager, versus being as hands-on as our first franchisees were.
So basically an enterprise type of operation as opposed to a single unit hands-on type operation.
Well, see, the thing is, we're not going to say no to single unit. We've actually separated into three different models. So the owner operator, the business operator, and the executive operator. So the first one is one territory or first refusal on a second. And then the second one is 2-2. And the third one is 3-3. The 3-3, we've never actually found someone who we felt could do it. Which I think is going to change in the U.S. given the amount of people and how franchising is so popular versus in Canada. It's growing, but it's not like it is in the U.S. So in Canada, we've awarded some 2-2s. We have a couple 1-1s, but in the States, we're looking to maybe get some 3-3s and see how that goes.
That's excellent.
Yeah.
I like the way that you've segmented that out. Wow, you sure you're only in your 20s? How old are you, actually?
Yeah, I'm 29.
Oh, okay, 29.
Yeah.
Wow, you've accomplished a lot in a very short time and really have a tremendous focus for your business. I am super impressed. And we're seeing a lot of that. We're going to talk a little bit about NextGen and Jennifer Cushell and her efforts. But before we do, want to learn a little bit more about your brand. So what type of support are you going to give, U.S. franchisees as they come on board?
Yeah, so I think that's one thing that really sets us apart. I mean, I think the main thing that sets us apart is our unique service, but really the support that we offer. So typically what I've seen is one support person for 35 franchisees. We literally have one person for every six franchisees, especially when they're starting up. Because one of the main things that I had issues with when starting up this model was a lot of people say, is it franchisable? Is it too complex to actually be a franchise system? And the thing is, yes and no, because we put a lot of systems in place, so softwares, we've tailored hardware, we've tailored chemistry to make it as simple as possible. But regardless, it is still something that's, quite a bit more complex than just the regular painting job. So the support that we give is they have a business coach who coaches them on a more strategic level. So that's myself and a couple of our VPs. And then we have a sales coach who's a seasoned person who's done at least 500 consultations before, who works either in our corporate territories or one of our franchise locations. And then they have a product coach who helps them with their ordering and if there's any issues they have with the paint, and a production coach who helps them optimize their labor. So they have four people that they can rely on, plus our administrative staff. So there's always someone that they can call. So I think that's going to be the key, because once they know what they're doing, then the possibilities are endless, because the service makes a lot of sense for customers. So we want to make sure they're doing it properly and they're generating referrals.
Very interesting. Is there anything unique with the brand and the business model with respect to technology?
Yeah, so it's actually been 3 years, 2.5 years in the making. I woke up one morning and I said, at some point I had built my business to 35 employees, and there was 8 teams all over the greater Montreal area, and I didn't even know where they all were because we had a production manager, et cetera. And I said, what if I could wake up, have a software that, told me where all my teams were, how they were doing, gave me all the key performance indicators, as well as did my paint ordering, as well as allowed me to scale to hire more sales consultants so that it could do my estimates and also automate the whole process right down to the end consumer, right down to integrating quality assurance, a system like Listen 360 that we use. So we've actually been working for 2.5 years on this system, integrating a whole bunch of APIs with who is now our chief technology officer. And this system literally automates the process from A to Z right down to our call center. So initially we had a whole bunch of issues where, you know, our call center staff is not necessarily from Calgary, so they don't know the little towns there. Well, with the postal code, we're able to see the drive time, the amount of time that it takes from one quote to the other. We don't have to see the franchisee's agenda. We just need the system to create an algorithm that gives them spots that they can book for them and pre-qualify the lead, just to book everything for them, and it's seamless, and they're not driving around the city like 2 hours across town. So we've literally automated all the issues that we've had in the last 2 years, and that's why I think we're really ready for the U.S., because the reason why it's been so complicated is because we've been doing a lot of stuff with Excel. We've had a lot of phone time. But now with this system, like, basically what I'm telling everybody is 2016 is our year to build our foundation. And then from there, we're going to scale. So we're doing that. We're hiring the staff. We're putting the softwares in place. We're finalizing our chemistry, our distribution. We're launching some new hardware. So that's why I'm super excited about the U.S. because we've done it in Canada without all this stuff. So I can't wait to do it in a bigger market with all this stuff.
We certainly look forward to it and wish you the greatest success. I love on your website where it says, you know, become a partner. We're looking for partners, not employees. We're looking for leaders, not followers. I mean, explain a little bit about that.
Yeah, so that's what I meant about, like, no longer necessarily the owner-operator. So, like, guys, the one thing is I tell everybody is Google is probably your most useful resource. So, like, people who are able to Google stuff, people who are able to add value to the system, find new things, find new ways of doing things. We don't want to be a traditional franchisor where, hey, this is the operations manual. These are steps 1 to 100. Stick within that. So we're not looking for people necessarily who love following a fixed process. We're still in the early stages of our franchise, so we'd like to shape it so that it makes sense for everybody. And that also entices a lot of higher-level people to come in and join the system because they feel like they're actually adding value to a certain extent. Obviously, we have to maintain some uniformity. But, like, for example, one of our franchisees on our internal system just posted something that she had found to do estimates quicker, and we're actually looking into that technology now with our software developers, and we might actually, with our engineer, develop something similar to what exists, but specifically tailored for SprayNet, something that we would have never seen because it only exists in Calgary. So, like, those are the kind of people that we want. We want to build a huge team because with pretty much the best people in the world, once you have a team with the best people in the world, I mean, possibilities are endless.
Sure. So in Canada, where your base is right now, I know you're operating a centrally operated call center. Will that be the case here in the United States as well?
So that's why we are looking to develop the East Coast within a one-hour time zone. Right now, we're actually taking calls from Vancouver, so three-hour time difference. So for the U.S., I mean, it's going to actually be simpler to do since the time zones are very similar to the Montreal time zone, the Eastern time zone.
Got it. That makes sense. And I love the way you position the investment on your website about buying a SprayNet painting franchise, a strategic business investment. I think that's really going to stand out, and I think you will draw some of the people in that will be looking at your, you know, your higher level franchise and looking to develop certainly more than one type of location. With respect to that, does somebody need to have an office, a bricks and mortar location for your franchise?
So that's why we've also split it into three now. That's not on our website yet. We're going to be launching that all that new concept in New York, and we're going to be updating our website. If you're owner-operator, not initially, at some point as you scale your business, that's where the business or strategic coach comes in and says, hey, here's a time where it makes sense to get, like, you know, a small warehouse to store your product and your trailers. When we're talking about the bigger packages, so the 3-3s for the executive operator, even the 2-2s for the business operators, we do have in the financial projections or operating expenses something along the lines of a rent in order to store all your stuff. Because when you're operating those bigger, multi-unit, if you will, you'll have multiple teams. So you'll have a lot of paint being shipped to you, a lot of supplies being shipped to you. So you got to put that somewhere.
That makes sense. That makes perfect sense. Yeah. What is the total investment for someone that might be interested in looking at your opportunity?
So it depends on the level, but the owner-operator there's a range. There's always a range just because based on a whole bunch of different variables, how much it costs to come down for training and how much inventory you want, et cetera. So the range for owner-operator is between 175 and 200. For the business operator, you're looking in the, you know, high 200s, 300s, and then for the executive operator in the low 500s. But that's three territories, three trailers, three franchise fees, and there's a lot that goes in there. And in the executive operator model, we also send someone for longer to train multiple teams. So there's a lot of training costs that go into that too. But it's really an initial cost that helps out of that business and scale it quicker.
Sure, sure. So yeah. This is Franchise Today. I'm Paul Segretto, speaking on behalf of my co-host, Stan Friedman, who's traveling back from IFA board meetings today. And our guest today is Carmelo Marsala, the president and CEO of SprayNet. Franchise Today is brought to you by Franchise Foundry, a business accelerator boasting more than 30 years of experience helping emerging brands bring sustainable growth to their franchise systems. Utilizing a hybrid coaching and consulting approach, the Foundry team fosters the development and deployment of effective short- and long-term solutions for their clients in several key areas, including franchise management and operations, change management, traditional and digital marketing and technology, relationship and business management, and, of course, franchise recruitment and development. The Franchise Foundry team also assists brands with raising capital and the exploration of merger and acquisition opportunities. Learn more about their expanding list of clients across various industry segments at franchisefoundry.com. That's www.franchisefoundry.com. Franchise Today is also brought to you by FRM Solutions, offering best-in-class CRM and content management software designed specifically for managing franchise relationships. Built-in industry-leading Microsoft Dynamics CRM, these solutions are both cloud-based as well as fully accessible from right inside your Outlook inbox. With FRM, you'll spend more time focused on the business of building top and bottom line growth, while FRM assists with effectively managing communications and collaboration with your prospective and existing franchisees. Sort, report, and dashboard all your vital data and empower your team to accelerate franchise sales, streamline store openings, and better manage your processes, workflows, unit-level performance, and compliance. No hassles, no long-term contracts, no excuses, just solutions. Check them out on the web at frmsolutions.com. And, of course, we're talking with Carmelo Marsala today. And I'd like to shift gears a bit, Carmelo. I know you had a great experience at the IFA convention with NextGen, which, of course, is we're a big fan of. Stan and I both know Jennifer very well. She's been on the show. We help her promote, you know, all NextGen activities. Tell us a little bit about your experience with NextGen.
Yeah, I was hoping we would talk about that. I think for me, that was probably one of the best experiences of my life. I mean, we were on the Canadian version of Shark Tank, and people asked me, which one were you more nervous for? And I was more nervous for the IFA pitch for Next Gen. So, especially like the whole way through, even our application, I'm like, oh, it's not strong enough. And then we made, you know, we made the 20 finalists. And then when we pitched to the Fran Sharks for the top three spot in front of, to pitch in front of everybody, I'm like, I screwed that up. And then we made the top three spot. And then I was like, okay, I'm pumped now. We're in the top three, and we're, you know, the audience is voting. It's in front of everybody at the IFA. And then, you know, when that vote came up there, it was, and that, like, you know, we were actually at the top spot. It was just so amazing because, like, there's a lot of people that are always like, oh, congrats, you know, it's really cool what you guys are doing. But when you're hearing it from the top franchise people in the world, I mean, that's just another level of validation. That means, like, you know, that's when I was like, okay, what we're doing really makes sense. Now we just got to do this properly. So, you know, I've always been a firm believer, if you do something right, it'll work, but getting it right is the hard part. So I'm like, I think we're on the right track to getting it right. So it just gave me the confidence to come back home and, like, you know, start a U.S. strategy. And we just met so many people. I mean, Jennifer is amazing. Dave McKinnon, who funded the program this year, is fantastic. Their mentorship has been great. I mean, it's just meeting all the people, like hearing from them, getting their opinions is just, it was a really good experience.
That's great. That's absolutely great. Yeah, the Next Gen program is just, you know, phenomenal. I had the great honor last year, as well as Stan did, of meeting one of the Next Gen trying to remember Alex, Alex Waddle from Austria, and he came back after the next gen in the IFA program and was just going through a tour of the United States, and I got to spend a day with him here in the Houston market. He spent time up at Subway headquarters, up at Dunkin' Donuts headquarters, at the Dwyer Group's headquarters. He went out to the West Coast with Jennifer. He spent time with Stan in Georgia. And just, you know, you guys are just knocking it out of the park. I mean, with the ideas, I talk, you know, with John Evans from Canada with his paint striping business. I know last week he was spending a few days with the Dwyer Group. I'm anxious to see what comes out of those meetings. I mean, just phenomenal stuff that's ahead for you guys. And you're right. I mean, the likes of Doc Cohen and David McKinnon and Jennifer Cashel and all the ones that just give so tirelessly to franchising and to the Next Gen program. I mean, my hats are certainly off to all of them, as well as young entrepreneurs like yourself. So you mentioned, you know, the Canadian version of Shark Tank, which we know as the Dragon's Den. Tell us a little bit about that experience, because, you know, there's so many entrepreneurs that say, oh, if only I could get on that show, I know it would be great. And tell us a little bit about, you know, maybe what your expectations were going into the show and what you thought coming out of the show.
Well, it's funny because I was hesitant to go on the show because I'm like, are we really going to give away a percentage of the company? So I didn't want to be one of those guys that just went up for exposure. But then I don't know if there's Air Miles in the U.S., but Air Miles every year in Canada has a Small Business Achievement Award. So we actually ended up winning the Young Entrepreneur segment of that. So I met Sean Wise, who's the advisor to the Dragons, and he kind of convinced me to go on the show. And then literally the next day, one of the producers called me and said, hey, come audition. We'd like to have Sprainet on Dragon's Den. So I said, well, you know what? This is a sign. Let me go on the show. And Jim Treliving is one of the guys, one of the Dragons. So Jim Treliving, for those who don't know, owns Mr. Lube and Boston Pizza. So he's like the franchise king, I guess, in Canada. So I literally went on the show, and I know he's never done a deal under 20%. He's been there 10 years. And I went on the show, and I offered 5%. So when I was on in the den, I guess, with all the Dragons, you know, they said, like, are you just here for the publicity, or, you know, you actually want to do a deal? He's like, Jim's never going to do a deal at 5%. He's never done it in 10 years. I'm like, well, look, I'm like, I can tell you one thing. I'm only here for Jim. And I can tell you another thing. There's no way I'm going to go above 5%. So I'm like, how about we make Jim make that decision, and let's not make it for him. Then we both looked at each other. And he's like, yeah, I'll do the deal. I'm like, perfect. So that's what happened on TV. So we kind of made history on Dragon's Den. And from that, we received literally within 2 days over 500 franchise requests. That's what literally allowed us to sell out Canada so quickly. We did end up actually doing the deal with Jim in the end, just because, I don't know, a whole bunch of stuff happened, and, you know, we were too busy to send him what he needed, and then just didn't end up working out. But, like, just the exposure from that show and getting that handshake from, you know, the franchise king in Canada validating the model, and then now doing the same thing at the IFA, it's just, like, when you get people who know what they're talking about backing what you're doing, it just speaks volumes, and then just people want to join. So that was literally that was amazing for the brand. But even the IFA, the Next Gen, I just want to go back quickly. Do we have a second to talk about that? Yeah. So at the IFA, it's funny because when I was, like, in Canada, I mean, it's not like in the U.S. We're not surrounded by the whole franchise world and stuff. The CFA is fairly small compared to the IFA. So, you know, I do a lot of research, and I was like, wow, there's the Dwyer Group, and then there's Service Brands International, and then, you know, Edible Arrangements. Wow, they're so big, and we order Edible Arrangements at the office. And then literally the day that I step in to the Next Gen, like, orientation meeting, there's Tariq Farid, there's David McKinnon, and there's Dina Dwyer. I'm like, wait a minute. Like, you guys are the guys, you know, the celebrities in my head that I've been researching, and, you know, and you're wanting to come to talk to me. And it's like almost as if the coin flipped. And it was just amazing because they knew who I was because they're part of the Next Gen program. So I'm still in contact with them. So it's just amazing to connect with those people because those are, like, kind of the celebrities in the franchise world for me, especially growing up in the franchise industry. So, yeah, that was amazing too.
Yeah, and you know, it was they give tirelessly to franchising and entrepreneurship. But I imagine it had to be a little bit daunting standing in front of those people, and then of course in front of the judges when you look at somebody like Aziz Hasheem and all he's done in his life, and David Mortensen and Tony Valley. And,
Tony Valley from College Pro, so that was cool.
Yeah, I imagine that was. Yeah. I liked your quote in there, and it said the best part about winning the Next Gen Top Award is definitely the confidence that I have taken home to share with my team that we're on the right track, getting the most votes from an audience filled with top franchise executives in the world is the best validation we could have gotten anywhere. I'm so thankful to everybody who helped put this amazing program together. And I think that says a lot about you and your organization, without a doubt. And you know, what's really intriguing to me, okay, because I do keep going back, to your age, and it seems like you have the wisdom far beyond your years. And you've won, numerous awards, and yet you remain humble to this day. I mean, you're the 2015 winner of the Next Gen in Franchising Global Competition, 2015 Air Miles Small Business Achievement Award as the Young Entrepreneur of the Year, 2014 finalist for the Ernst & Young Young Entrepreneur of the Year. I mean, and there are others, and you've been interviewed by numerous magazines and newspapers. I mean, and yet at the end of the day, from what I know about you and what I've heard about you, I mean, you put your pants on the same way as everybody else does, and you just go about and just want to keep growing this company. I mean, I just think that's fantastic.
Thanks, Paul. Well, look, I mean, you don't do it alone, right? So, like, there's no point in taking all the merit. And, yes, I do wear pretty much the same thing every single day, 7 days a week, the same pants, the same spray net polo. I mean, like, there's no point in, like, wearing a suit. What's the point? Like, we're all working in this together. And you know, like, I got to give a bit of credit. Well, I got to give a lot of credit to the team and, my franchise consultant, who's now our vice president. Like, if I seem wise, like, I've also had, 2 years ago, I was a bit of a hothead, right? Like, so, like most entrepreneurs, I've kind of calmed down a bit. I've been more in control of my emotional intelligence, if you will, kind of working on my attention versus perception. So a lot of that has been a lot of coaching too, from like a lot of people who are a lot older than me. So I've surrounded myself with the people who are more patient, and kind of fill in the gaps that, my entrepreneurial personality, I guess, if you will, doesn't necessarily have. So I think we have a good team. And I'm learning a lot from them, as they're probably learning a bit from me. And we're also learning a lot from people outside the organization, like the IFA, like you, like everybody in the franchise world. It's amazing how much people share in the community of the IFA. So it's been really cool.
Well, that is really great. And we will continue to help share. And I know you're going to be the type that will give back. So I want you to go back, years in your life. And when did you first realize that you wanted to be an entrepreneur? It might not have been in the sense that you wanted to be an entrepreneur, but when did you first realize that this was the direction you wanted to go, as opposed to being a doctor or a lawyer or something else?
Well, actually, I told this story actually a lot of times. Basically, once I was done College Pro, I had a job as a stockbroker. So I have a degree in finance, a minor in marketing. That job was lined up. I actually got the job before I graduated. I thought I had graduated already. So I said, well, you know what? I'm done College Pro. I'm graduating in April. We'll start in April. Well, I had gotten a call from someone who said, hey, I'd like to get my house sprayed. I'm like, okay, well, I don't even know how you found my number, but okay. And then for some reason, I got three other calls. And I'm like, okay, well, I don't do this anymore, but let me just call these people back and then see what happens. So I did those four quotes, signed all four jobs, and I said, well, crap, I don't have any equipment left. I don't have anything. I don't have contracts. So, I literally called them up the next day and said, sorry, can't take the job as a stockbroker. It just didn't feel right. And I just bought back all my equipment within that week, started those jobs. And then that's where I started pounding on those doors, like I wrote in, like the quote that you read earlier. And then we built it from there. So for me, like going in as a stockbroker, it just didn't even feel right just from the interview process. just for the fact that it was like a boss and like, I'm just not good with that kind of environment. So I think it was just a path that like, especially since I like literally called him the next day after I got those quotes, I think that tells you a bit about my personality, and I would have never lasted as a stockbroker anyways. Like I don't have the patience to, you know, to do small talk, I guess, if you will. So, yeah.
So knowing that you're of Italian descent, and we know how much family means to us, and of course myself being of Italian descent, what was the family perspective when you said, I'm not going to be a stockbroker, I want to go in this direction?
Well, you know what, it's funny because nobody's ever asked me that question publicly, which is strange because I've done a ton of interviews and I've never really even said it publicly, but I was kind of on my own, if you will. I know a lot of Italian families are very family oriented, but my dad passed away when I was very young, when I was 10. So that kind of shook up everything. So I did everything kind of on my own. So like literally when I was 23 and like, you know, people started seeing more and more trucks, they're like, well, what do you do? Like, why do you have so many trucks? I'm like, well, I started my business 2 years ago. And they're like, oh, okay. You have employees? I'm like, yeah, 35 of them. I'm like, what? So I was very like independent in that sense. Like even my mom was kind of wondering, and I was always like, I was always gone, right? I was always working. So she was wondering what I was doing. And then now she actually works with us. So,
That's awesome.
So yeah. Yeah. That's kind of how it happened.
So along the way, you're now speaking basically three different languages. You have a proficiency in Italian and, of course, French, being up in Quebec, and English. And that in itself, you know, I always marvel at that because I have a hard enough time, you know, with one language. How does that, you know, play into – you know, and I know up in Quebec it's difficult because you have your certain requirements with contracts that have to be French and English, and I know so many people have just immediately put up the barrier and said, oh, I don't want to do business there because now we have to worry about things in French and everything else. You know, how does that, you know, how do you use that to your advantage? Because it certainly should be something you should use to your advantage. I mean, being able to speak three different languages is definitely going to help you when your next international growth is beyond the United States.
Yeah, well, we actually get a ton of requests from France. I was actually at the Paris franchise show just visiting, didn't have a booth there. But because of all of our stuff is also in French, we get a ton of requests from Europe, from France, from a lot of French-speaking nations. Yeah, that's probably like the next 3 years will probably be the U.S. We'd like to do Australia. And then some French-speaking nations, probably France first, because surprisingly, there's a lot of franchising happening in France. The Expo was a lot bigger than I had expected it to be. But I think the biggest advantage is starting in what I feel is a harder market for us. Like every time I go to any franchise association, whether it be the Canadian one or the International Franchise Association, like, yeah, we're all over North America, but we're not in Quebec. And it's the same thing for everybody, just because, like you said, there's that barrier to entry and it's a language and it's complicated. So when we actually moved into English Canada, for me, I was like, wow, this is amazing because French is my third language. So we kind of built the franchise model and it was a bit uncomfortable for me. Like I'm like even, you know, worried when I'm sending out emails because of spelling mistakes, et cetera. And then when we started doing stuff in English, I'm like, wow, this is so much better. Like I can actually feel comfortable not only doing interviews, sending emails. I know I'm not making grammar mistakes. So like, I think the advantage was, you know, it just feels so much easier to do stuff in English now that we've always done it in French. So I think that's the biggest advantage of all that.
That's interesting. So can I put you on the spot and ask you to tell us, you know, 60 words about your company in French?
Will anybody understand?
I'm sure there'll be somebody, but I think it would be neat.
Well, okay. You want me to just say what we do in French?
Yeah, that would be great.
Okay. En fait, ce qu'on fait, c'est qu'on amène la peinture d'usine chez les clients. On a pris la technologie qui est industrielle dans les manufacturiers de peinture pour justement amener une peinture extérieure qui est permanente chez les clients, qui fait non seulement du sens pour nos consommateurs ainsi que nos partenaires franchisés. Did you understand me?
That's awesome. I did not, but it sounded great. It sounded great.
Right?
I love it. Yes, it sounded perfect. You were spot on. That's awesome.
Thanks.
So, what does Carmelo do when he's not, you know, nose to the grindstone, you know, working? I mean, how do you chill? How do you relax? How do you, you know, play hard as well as work hard?
Yeah, well, we actually have a corporate soccer team. I played semi-professional soccer when I was younger. So a lot of the guys that work with us actually also did. So we have like a really good soccer team. We actually finished first in the Industrial League season and in the playoffs. So I do some soccer. Obviously, spend time with my wife and my new child. Well, new child. She's almost a year old now. It's funny because
congratulations.
Yeah, thanks.
That's great.
Yeah, everybody talks about how, you know, a child changes your life and stuff, and it does. I mean, obviously, I'm still working 7 days a week, but, like, she's the only person that can make me smile, even though, you know, when you have those days, and you just see her, and she laughs, and you're like,
mm-hmm.
Oh, okay, well, she's so cute, you have to smile. So, I think she's the, you know, she's the joy in my life at this point. So, yeah.
That's great. Yeah, mine are grandchildren at this point. They definitely need to stop me in my tracks and get me to smile. So
yeah.
You're also now.
Well, I know you have more time for them now.
Oh yeah, without a doubt. And I know now you also do some guest lecturing at Concordia University. I think that's great giving back. I'm sure that a lot of the students have to sit there very wide eyed and listen to your story and read about you with your you know, success up there in Canada, being on, you know, the Dragon's Den, and certainly with all you've achieved. Also support the ALS Society of Canada. Tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah, that ties into what I said earlier. So that's what my dad had. So I kind of,
mm-hmm.
you know, from the age of, I guess, 8 to 10, I kind of lived through, you know, what it does to somebody. I don't really talk about it that much, but yeah, that's mainly the reason. So it's more of a sentimental thing. I figure, I mean, if I could do something and help in some way to you know, to find a cure, which I know is probably not the best way just by cutting a check. But I mean, as we grow and I have more time, I think I want to be a bit more involved in these kind of things and, you know, and maybe having fundraisers where we can actually, you know, leverage not only our brand, but our team to actually raise like more money. Rather than just cutting a check, but I mean, unfortunately, that's what we have the time for. But yeah, so that's why I support that.
Well, that's really good. I'm glad I asked that question because I knew there had to be something in there. Of course, I did not know about your dad, and I know that had to be tough. But you know, you looked at the challenges ahead, pulled yourself up, and said, "This is what I'm going to do." And I think certainly that's got to be an honor to him looking down from heaven on you. I think that's great. So, future for you and your organization. I mean, where do you see, you know, everything 10 years from now?
So we've only been around for not even 6. So 10 is like projecting ourselves really far into the future. But what I do see is becoming a multi-brand franchisor. We're building our team to do that, not only from you know, human resources perspective, but software, legal perspective, just because with our chemists and our engineers, we're actually testing new products to launch different brands. We want to be a multi-brand franchisor that offers unique. So the same thing that made SprayNet so successful because it's unique and it's innovative, we want to offer other brands that offer that same twist. So not just service, but service that, well, you're not competing necessarily against the homeowner, not something that people can't do themselves and that doesn't necessarily exist in the way that it exists in the commercial or industrial field, and bringing that on site to the homeowners at a residential level. So, I mean, there's a couple of brands in the works right now, and that's also why we're choosing our franchisees carefully to eventually, you know, hopefully become multi-brand franchisees too. So I know you spoke about that a bit earlier, but yeah, that's the executive profile that we're talking about, you know, the executive operator. That's why we kind of created that new model this year.
So out of the blue, a big company comes around, offers you this ridiculous amount of money, and you take it. Can you retire, or do you go on to something else entrepreneurial?
ask my wife that question, and she'll say I'll never retire. So yeah, no, I mean, I guess like literally if in 2 hours I'm like, okay, well, what are we doing? Like even our vacations, she doesn't call them vacations. It's like we always have to be doing something. I get anxious if I'm not doing anything. So like, sure. I don't think I would be able to retire.
Yeah,
I kind of knew
the answer to that question. Yeah, I kind of knew the answer to that question. I mean, there's so many great ones in franchising that have followed that same path. And of course, they're, you know, twice removed from their original company, and they're still, you know, plugging along, developing new company, helping where they can, growing things. John Rocci is one that comes to mind that now is formed Framworth up in Michigan. It just, you know, tremendous stories all the way around. You have guys like Aziz Hashim, and you look at his story and you think, my God, you know, that's a tremendous path. So, you know, entrepreneurs are a unique breed. They really are. And they're what makes this country and all countries just, you know, tick on all cylinders. I mean, I think it's great. This is Franchise Today. We're live with Carmelo Marcella. So as we wrap up, how would individuals get in touch with you to learn more about your brand?
Yeah, so they can go on our franchise website, which is spraynetfranchise.com, all one word. They can even just Google SprayNet franchise. They'll find us. We'll be at the IFE show in New York at the Javits Center. I mean, hopefully there'll be a lot of people who've heard about us there who coming to just see us. Those candidates are always the kind of people that we like to see because, you know, they're already into the brand. They've read everything they can on the brand. So, yeah, basically the web right now, or they can call our 1-800 number, which is 1-877-45-SPRAY.
And what booth number are you going to be at the IFE?
What booth number?
Yeah, do you know?
I should know this because you figured you'd probably ask me, but I don't know.
That's okay. That's okay. They'll find you in the directory, and certainly, Carmel, I look forward to spending a little bit of time with you. Actually, I hope you don't have the time to spend time with me because that means your booth will be packed. No, but I will stop by, and I look forward to spending a few moments with you. I really appreciate it. Thank you for taking your time from what I know is a very busy schedule for being with us, and especially on short notice. I mean, to our audience, we just reached out yesterday to All Points PR, and they really helped us, and it was great that they did, and I appreciate you were able to do so on such short notice. Thank you again, Carmel.
Thanks, Paul. Looking forward to meeting you.
Sounds good. So we're wrapping up another segment of Franchise Today. We'll be back next week, same time, same station. In the meantime, you know, make sure if you're in the New York area, go to the International Franchise Expo. I also want to shout out to Gary Occhiogrosso for having me on his radio show, Small Business and Franchising on AM Radio. This was this past Sunday. It's on their site in a podcast format. Stan Friedman, my co-host, will be on this coming Sunday, all talking about the International Franchise Expo. Until next week, my name is Paul Segretto, wishing you the best, the very best, in this great, great thing we call franchising, and Franchise Today is out.